Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host, a father of five, homeschooling our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. During the demise of Western civilization, the breakdown of science in the modern world, largely due to the fact that people are led to trust really, really rotten science produced by environmentalism and, of course, Darwinism. We can throw that one in, too. But bad science is corrupting the way that people view science. Hey, according to this New York Times article, there are far fewer people who believe that climate change is happening and established by largely man-made reasons, down from 41% in November 2009 to 26% now. In other words, far, far fewer Britons believe in global warming. Far fewer Germans believe in global warming, 42% down from 62% just a couple of years ago. Folks, people are losing their confidence in science. You remember Dr. Phil Jones, long-term director of the Climatic Research Unit at the University of East Anglia, resigned a little while back, recently gave an interview to the BBC where he admitted that there was no statistically significant difference between rates of warming from 1860 to 1880, 1910 to 1940, and the rate from 1975 to 1998, though he and other global warming believers had for years said the rate in the last period was unprecedented and therefore couldn't be natural but must be man-made. He also admitted that he did not believe the debate on climate change is over. And he didn't believe the vast majority of climate scientists think this. He also admitted that natural influences could have contributed to the 75 to 98 warming. He also admitted that the revelation of data handling failures at CRU and elsewhere had shaken the trust many people have in science. He also admitted that the medieval warm period might well have been as warm as the current warm period, 1975 to the present. Folks, this whole global warming thing's falling apart at the seams. And it's because it was precipitated by really, really bad science, taught by really, really bad professors in really, really bad science departments and universities across this country and, of course, throughout good parts of Europe. Well, in just a moment, we're going to try to bring a little more rationality back into the area of science with Dr. E. Calvin Beisner. He's been on the program before. He's coming back. And Dr. E. Calvin Beisner is going to join me to talk about real science and what happened when bad science corrupted environmental thinking. Be back in just a moment. This is Kevin Swanson.
Foundations of Our Fathers is a theme for the annual Christian Family Conference coming to the Denver Merchandise Mart June 17th through the 19th. Join hundreds of Christian families from across Colorado and attend a variety of challenging and encouraging seminars. Keynote speakers include Dr. Vody Bauckham and Kevin Swanson. Join us on Thursday, June 17th for a special all-day Biblical Family Seminar. Visit the exhibit hall with curriculum from over 200 vendors, including youth entrepreneurs. It all happens at the Christian Family Conference, June 17 to 19, at the Denver Merchandise Mart, presented by Christian Home Educators of Colorado. Register today. Hurry and save on pre-conference pricing. For more information and to register, go online to chec.org. That is check.org.
Welcome back, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host today, and desperately searching for a balanced perspective on Christians and the environment. Of course, we are to take dominion, proper dominion, and subdue the creation according to God's word, and hopefully not give way to all the other worldviews out there in the process. And with me to talk about this is Dr. E. Calvin Beisner, who is part of the Cornwall Alliance. By the way, the Cornwall Alliance is dedicated to bringing about a balanced biblical view of stewardship in relation to the environment. So this is exactly what we're talking about today. But Dr. E. Calvin Beisner has been involved in this for a long time. He has lectured in universities and seminaries for quite some time. He's a homeschool father of seven, ages 14 to 25. And he is joining me now on the Generations Radio broadcast. Welcome, Dr. Beisner.
Thanks very much, Kevin. I've appreciated your work for years.
Well, thank you. And we remember having you on the show 7 years ago. I'm sorry it's been that long, but boy, a lot has happened since then. You think about it, the global warming issue has really gotten traction over the years, but I'm sensing it's losing some speed.
Yeah, it does seem to be. You know, 7 years ago when you had me on the program, the Cornwall Alliance didn't actually even exist yet. We didn't found it until August of 2005, so just a little less than 5 years ago.
Okay.
In the interim, global warming fears have gone from really dominating public thought all around, certainly the developed world, particularly Western Europe, Britain, and the United States, to now, frankly, polls show that the vast majority of Americans and Europeans and Britons put it right at the bottom of their list of significant concerns. The belief in dangerous man-made global warming has fallen, has plummeted. Well under 40% of Americans now believe in it.
Yeah, here's an article from the New York Times. I just pulled off the press May 24th. Last month, hundreds of environmental activists crammed into an auditorium here to ponder an anguish question. If the scientific consensus on climate change has not changed, why are so many people turned away from the idea that human activity is warming the planet? Of course, assuming that scientists haven't changed on this issue at all. But a survey in February has the BBC found that only 26% of Britons now believe the climate change is happening is now established as largely man-made, down from 41% in November 2009. So a huge drop. Not only 26% of Britons believe in this climate change problem, and the German magazine Der Spiegel found that 42% of Germans found global warming feared global warming, down from 62% 4 years earlier. So it's in free fall. I mean, people are no longer trusting apparently the scientific consensus, quote unquote.
Yeah, quote unquote is the right way to put it too, because frankly, that scientific consensus never existed. Al Gore's been claiming it ever since 1992. And no attempt to actually discover that by quantified polling of climate scientists, whether climatologists or meteorologists or atmospheric physicists or chemists, whatever. No polling of the climate scientists has ever supported the notion that there was this overwhelming consensus of scientists that global warming was largely man-made and that it was going to be dangerous. Now, almost all climate scientists, including all the people that are referred to as climate skeptics or global warming deniers, certainly agree that human activity has probably some influence on global temperature, and they agree that there has been some warming recently, but they don't think that the amount of influence we have is in any way dangerous. And they don't think that the recent warming has been in any way unprecedented. They see it as a continuation of natural cycles that have dominated climate through the whole history of the Earth. You know, the real deniers here are the people who insist that recent warming is somehow unusual, because what they're denying is that climate has changed similarly all through Earth's history. And that's what geologic history certainly tells us.
And perhaps the larger issue is that science has changed dramatically over the last 20 to 30 years to the point where it's been heavily politicized. As you pointed out, there was a huge disagreement, and yet the politicization of science is sort of a new thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and Kevin, it goes beyond politicization of science. I mean, that certainly happens, and there is some corruption of science that comes from the fact that the vast majority of funding for it comes from governments, which means that it has to be approved by politicians who have very different motivations for why they want to send money to this or that or another project. But it also goes even to a deeper, more philosophical level. Postmodernism has invaded the realm of science now under the name of what is being called post-normal science, promoted especially by a philosopher of science at the University of Oxford by the name of Jerome Ravitz, but also embraced by many people who are right at the center of the alarmist climate change community, like, for example, Mike Hume, who's professor of climate change at the University of East Anglia in Britain, from which, by the way, there came the release of thousands of emails showing that a lot of these climate scientists had been fabricating data, exaggerating data, suppressing data that didn't fit their hypothesis, intimidating dissenting scientists, corrupting the peer review process to make sure that dissenting articles didn't get published in journals, and so on. This is science falsely so-called. Post-normal science is really the death of real science. I wrote about that in a blog piece that people can see at cornwallalliance.org. Just go there and click on blog and scroll down through the various blog entries till they come to an article that I called Wanted for Premeditated Murder. And it discusses how post-normal science has been murdering real science.
Why don't you describe it a little bit more in detail, Dr. Beisner? What you're saying is that people are taking that worldview to science itself and the method of science and corrupting science in the process. Science being, I think, originally, at least how we use it today, originally rooted in the scientific ideas of Christians like Isaac Newton, Pascal, and others. But now you have other people with vastly differing worldviews from those that founded these scientific endeavors like chemistry and physics and biology and these sorts of things. Now you've got a new scientist with a different worldview, and they are going to do a vastly different form of science.
That's exactly right. You know, science in the Western world, and that's the only place where it has really developed historically, science grew out of the Christian worldview that said that a rational God created an orderly universe that we can understand through careful investigation using the rational minds that God has given us, that reflect his own mind. And so we can detect order, we can use the experimental method to discover what hypotheses, what explanations of what we see really make sense and what ones don't. And so we have had a history of science dealing with what we call public facts. That is, when you and I and others look at the same objects out there, we ought to be able to see the same things. And when we share data, our experiments and their findings ought to be replicable. And that's part of the reason why science has always, until very recently, in the rise of post-normal science, science has always insisted on making data public, making methods public, so that after you publish your results of your experiment or your theory, other scientists can take the same raw data, take the same methods, and find out whether they give them the same results. If they don't, then your theory is falsified. Well, post-normal science has essentially rejected that whole understanding of how science is done. And that's part of why the people at the very center of Climategate, the scandal over all of this fabrication of data and so on, that's why they refuse in so many instances to share their raw data. They get upset. I mean, we had an email from Phil Jones, the director of the Climate Research Unit at the University of East Anglia, to Warwick Hughes, a scientist in Australia, who had asked for the raw data on some surface temperature measurements. And Jones said, "Why should I share these data with you? We've been working for years on this, and all you want to do is to falsify our results." Well, that's what science is all about. When you run from that, you run from real science.
Almost sounds like alchemists working in their laboratories, and of course nobody is ever going to be able to repeat what they did, but trust them. Whatever they did really produced gold out of iron, you know?
Yeah, it becomes magic instead of real science.
Right.
What they do, too, is they then begin to say, look, we're not talking about pursuing truth. Because as postmodernists, we've abandoned the notion that language can even convey truth. Instead, what we want to do is to promote a particular vision of society, a particular political ideal, and therefore, in the conversation over whether global warming is real and how much of it has happened and what causes it, you know, it's not only important that we look at atmospheric chemistry and at how much energy is being emitted from the Earth's atmosphere back out into space, those objective scientific things, we also have to get stakeholders involved in the discussion. You know, people who say, well, I might be affected if global warming is happening because it'll affect my crops this way, or it'll affect the birds that I like to watch in my neighboring forest that way. stakeholders become a part of the question, the conversation over what's true. Now, that is not science. That's politics. That's sociology. It may be psychology, but it's not science. And that's what has undermined public faith in the climate science community, which has been shown at its very core to be heavily, heavily infected by this post-normalism and post-modernism. And as a result, public belief in dangerous man-made global warming has plummeted, and therefore public support for attempts to fight it has plummeted too, which is a good thing, because those attempts would be very destructive economically, especially to the world's poor.
This is still a very emotional issue to a lot of folks out there, as you know, because once you spend $1 trillion on an emperor's new clothes project, the sort of credibility at stake has got to be monumental here. I mean, you literally can't afford to face the truth, let alone tell it to somebody.
Yeah, and it would be nice, frankly, Kevin, if it were only $1 trillion that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But, for example, the Waxman-Markey cap-and-trade legislation that passed in the House last July, and there's now similar legislation coming up in the Senate, sponsored by Kerry and Lieberman. Waxman-Markey, if it were to become law and fully implemented, would cost the American economy something in the neighborhood of $9.4 trillion between now and 2035. It would cause direct energy costs to rise on the average, for the average American household, by about $1,200 a year. And indirect energy costs, that's the energy component of everything else that we buy, the energy price component of it, food, clothing, shelter, transportation, anything that you get, those would rise by about another $2,400 a year for a combined increase of about $3,600 a year in the cost of living for American families. Meanwhile, because this legislation would also cause a lot of new so-called green jobs to be created by government mandates, which means that they wouldn't be created without them, which means that that's because they're losers. The market won't invest where it's going to lose. You wind up destroying more jobs than you create, as Spain discovered when it tried the same kind of thing. For every new green job it created, it destroyed 2.1 other jobs. So families are going to see their costs rising by about $3,600 a year, at the same time that they're seeing jobs getting destroyed. And one economic model indicates that we would have, on average, about 1.1 million fewer jobs in any given year between now and 2035 than we would without the legislation.
And all of this hinges on whether or not Dr. Phil Jones had it right at the University of East Anglia, and he's already come out and said, well, actually, we're not really sure we had it right. There's really no statistically significant difference between the rates of warming from 1860 to 1880, 1910 to 1940, and 1975 to 1998, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, he's admitting that we may not be seeing the global warming we thought we had been seeing.
That's correct. In an interview with BBC, he admitted that. He admitted that the medieval warm period may very well have been warmer than the recent warming period. He admitted that there had been no statistically significant warming in the last 15 years. That goes back to 1995. He admitted that he was so sloppy in his data archiving that he was not able to recover a lot of the raw data underlying his surface temperature trend lines, and those have been depended on by governments all over the world and by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for their estimate of how much warming we've had since the mid-1970s. This is really quite horrendous, and it's frankly very, very sad. It's tragic, but it's not surprising that Dr. Jones actually said in one of these interviews that he has, since all of this came public, he has come close to thinking seriously about committing suicide. It has so tarnished his reputation as a scientist.
Well,
frankly, rightly so.
You can see how much is at stake here, Dr. Beisner. You've got a world watching. You've got $9 trillion in cap and trade. You've got arguably $80 trillion worldwide at stake right now. Nations' economies at stake, and they may be collapsing because of some scientists who didn't do their science right. I mean, what could happen here in relation to the public's view of science and scientists? I mean, what could happen to science itself as a result of all this?
It's a very sad thing, and I think truly a very, very dangerous thing, because science properly done is a wonderful thing. It is, you know, it's how we have gone from pre-industrial times to the way we live now.
Yeah.
It's what has taken us from average human life expectancy at birth before the Industrial Revolution of about 27 or 28 years to average human life expectancy at birth now in the high 70s in industrialized countries and in the high 60s around the world as a whole. It's what has taken us from constant abject poverty, high rates of disease and premature death, infant and child mortality running in the neighborhood of 4 out of 10, 40 to 50%. It's science and the technology that flows from it has taken us from that poverty to the kind of prosperity that we have, and it's what promises to do the same sort of thing in the rest of the world, all because we've been using the minds God gave us to use properly the world that God has given us, according to Psalm 115, verse 16, the earth he has given to the sons of men, to benefit ourselves this way. But when you undermine faith in science, people begin to turn from rationality, from logos, to mysticism, to irrationality instead. And that undermines technological progress, it undermines economic development, and it keeps people poor for millennia.
Yeah.
That's why the part of the world that was not early influenced by Christianity is so far behind economically.
We're not saying necessarily that the world's going to fall back into this cannibalistic, human-sacrificing, superstitious, New Agey, super-spiritual sort of a mystical mess. But if Christians don't get engaged and begin to engage their worldview in the area of science, we will be in trouble.
That's exactly right. And this, by the way, Kevin, is why the Cornwall Alliance has just been working on producing a series of 12 lectures by some outstanding theologians and philosophers and scientists and pastors and pro-life leaders. For example, Charmaine Krauss Yost, the president of Americans United for Life, has spoken for us on environmentalism's threats to the sanctity of human life. Dr. Vishal Mangalwadi, an Indian apologist, disciple of Francis Schaeffer, has spoken for us on the turn from reason to mysticism in environmentalism. Dr. Peter Jones of Westminster Seminary out in California has spoken for us on both environmentalism's false gospel and how it compares with the true Christian gospel, and how environmentalism has become, in essence, a religion of its own. We have scientists, Dr. David LeGates, a climatologist, speaking on global warming and the like. We've just produced this series. We're not quite ready to start shipping it yet, but it's called Resisting the Green Dragon, 12 DVDs that people can use in Sunday school classes, in home schools, in private schools, and various other settings. And they can see all about it at resistingthegreendragon.com.
Okay.
We're very excited about this. We think it's going to be a tremendous resource. And it'll be accompanied as well. People can order separately from it, but a book that'll probably have the same title, Resisting the Green Dragon, by Christian physicist Dr. James Wanless. We're very, very excited about both of these.
Fantastic. Sounds like great resources, folks, available at resistingthegreendragon.com. Don't forget the website, cornwallalliance.org as well. Dr. Beisner, we only have a minute or two left. How do we as Christians get engaged, get involved? How do we bring our worldview into the area of science? Give us some basic propositions here.
Great question. One, people have got to be well informed, and that's one reason why I would invite them again to come to cornwallalliance.org. They should sign up for our free electronic newsletter, which can be done in seconds on our homepage. Just fill in your email address in the newsletter subscription line and click subscribe, and you're done. You've got it. That will keep you up to date on what's going on in these fields. They can also read two recent documents of ours, one called an Evangelical Declaration on Global Warming that has already been signed by something in the neighborhood of 900 people. We actually haven't had time to keep track and keep tabulating it all, but well over 150 prominent Christian leaders have signed this. And it is based also on another document called A Renewed Call to Truth, Prudence, and Protection of the Poor, an evangelical examination of the theology, science, and economics of global warming. And that's by actually 29 different scholars, all evangelicals, theologians, scientists, and economists, who have examined this question in great detail. And it provides really solid understanding of the global warming debate and shows why, biblically, scientifically, economically, there is no good justification for us to be spending trillions or even billions of dollars trying to fight global warming. What we need to be doing instead is to promote economic development through abundant and affordable energy so that the poor in the world, especially the roughly 2 billion who don't have electricity to their homes, can begin to get that and be delivered from the high rates of disease and premature death that come, say, for instance, from burning wood and dried dung as their main heating and cooking fuels, and then breathing the smoke from that and dying of tuberculosis and other diseases. We're very pleased that we're able to offer so much different information at our website. And thank you very, very much, Kevin, for having me on to talk today. And we hope you're doing it again.
And we appreciate your information very much, Dr. Beisner. Again, folks, it's cornwallalliance.org for more information. Thanks a bunch, my friend, and we'll hopefully get back with you within hopefully another couple of months here.
Great. Thanks very much, Kevin. God bless.
And we ask the question again and again, my friends, do worldviews matter? Of course they matter. Of course they matter. The sort of worldviews that are taught in the majority of higher education facilities across this country really do impact the way people think, the way they work, the way they do their science, the way they live. And because postmodernism, relativism, has pretty much infected the epistemology of every single modern academic, not all, but the vast majority of them, because that has seeped into their consciousness, it has affected their science, and it is about to destroy science in this country. Well, it takes organizations like the Cornwall Alliance to salvage science, and hopefully Christians everywhere will begin to act, not in just the area of science, but every single worldview application you can find. And that's our encouragement on this program. Bring a biblical worldview to bear, especially in education. Begin with the fear of God as the beginning of wisdom and knowledge in science classes, and you'll be a lot further along in the area of rationalism, in the area of rationally determining evidence and interpreting evidence in order to produce good science for the years to come. Well, folks, you can interact with this radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also support our program right now. We're in the middle of a fundraising campaign. We're hoping to get 100 sponsors around the world to support this radio program that reaches tens of thousands of people around the world. You can be one of those 100 sponsors by simply going to our website, kevinswanson.com, and click on Become a Partner for Generations. Presently, we're at 37. On our way, 63 to go, to our goal of 100. If you'd like to support the program with $10, $20, or $100, please just go to kevinswanson.com and click on Become a Partner today. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. Get your friends and family members tuned into us as well at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.